I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. This fall marks 25 years since Athens' own REM put out the iconic album Automatic for the People. Night swimming. We will mark that music milestone by talking with REM bass player Mike Mills this week. Be sure to join us for that conversation. First, though, we want to hear from you if you're an REM fan. What is your favorite song? It doesn't have to be the best song, just your favorite and why you like it. Tell us at 404-500-9457, and then be sure to join us this week for that conversation. Most people imagine God looks basically human. That idea is in the first chapter of the Old Testament's first book.
So God created man in his own image.
In his own image. That is from Genesis. A new book by Ressa Aslan challenges that idea and the morality it produces. The book is called God, A Human History. It hits shelves this week, and Ressa appears in Atlanta this Saturday as part of the Marcus Jewish Community Center's Book Festival. And joins me now. Hi, Ressa.
Hi, Celeste.
It's good to talk to you. And you know, I wonder, let's just start with the fact that every book that you put out, people label as controversial. Can you write about religion without being controversial?
Well, not really. I mean, that's the thing. I think people think that I'm somehow courting controversy, and I promise you that I'm not. It's just that when you talk and write about religion for a living, you're bound to step on some toes. I mean, people tend to take religion seriously. I'm not sure if you know that or not. And also, when you talk about it in the way that I do, which is try to bring some kind of a historical lens upon it, to really try to look at scripture and tradition and religious history from an objective perspective, you tend to anger both sides of the aisle, both those who are very religious, who feel as though you are denying the divine quality of their faith, and those who are anti-religious, who think that you're taking religion too seriously. So, you know, it's something that I'm used to, I guess, at this point.
Well, certainly, before we dig into the current book, let's talk about your former book and the TV interview that went viral. It was on Fox in 2013. This is from Spirited Debate. The host was Lauren Green.
You're a Muslim, so why did you write a book about the founder of Christianity?
Well, to be clear, I am a scholar of religions with 4 degrees, including one in the New Testament and fluency in biblical Greek, who has been studying the origins of Christianity for 2 decades, who also just happens to be a Muslim.
I have a feeling that that's going to be like stamped on my gravestone one day.
Well, it did bring you a lot of attention, right? I mean, your publisher was probably pretty happy. But I wonder, I mean, that's not something, scholars don't often have to defend their own credentials.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, like no one would say to say, let's say, a Monet scholar with a German heritage, how dare you study French Impressionism?
Yeah.
Right.
But
again, religion is a different thing because, yes, of course, it is an academic discipline to be studied. But it is also a matter of identity. It's how people define who they are and their place in the world. And so obviously it's a matter of deep devotion and emotion. And again, you know, it comes with the whole category. It's what happens when you deal with something that is so emotionally resonant for people.
So since you're talking about identity, that brings us very nicely to the current book, which is called God, A Human History. And you start by just laying out the fact that pretty much every religion, in fact, every human being, if they believe in God, they tend to think of God as being looking like a human. And in most cases, like an older male. Why do we do that?
Well, not just if you believe in God, but even if you don't believe in God. It's often the case that, you know, when someone will say, well, I don't believe in God, you have to ask them a far more important question, which is, what do you mean by God? And often what they mean is, an old man living in the sky, looking down at us, punishing us for the wrong things that we do. And I always have to say that I don't believe in that God either. And in fact, if anything else, what I'm really trying to do with this book is to get past that simple polarization of do you or do you not believe in God and get to a much more fundamental question, which is what do you mean when you say God? And what the evidence suggests is that more often than not, consciously or not, whether we believe in God or not, what the vast majority of us mean when we say God is a divine version of ourselves, a human being, but with superhuman powers.
So, and in the very early pages, I think it's even in your introduction, you talk about why that's problematic. You say even the fact that we think of God as reflecting ourselves, I want to read this sentence here, that more than anything else explains why throughout human history, religion has been a force both for boundless good and for unspeakable evil.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I mean, think about it. When we conceive of God as a divine version of ourselves, what we do is we essentially divinize our own attributes or on personalities. We project upon God our traits, our virtues and our vices, our strengths and our weaknesses. We make God essentially a reflection of everything that is good or bad about us. We impose upon God our compassion, our thirst for justice, but we also impose upon him our prejudices, our biases. We essentially make God the mirror of everything that we are, everything that we love, everything that we hate. And in doing so, we create this kind of superhuman being who has human attributes, but without any human limitations. And it's not a surprise, therefore, that this kind of mindset leads to these irreconcilable religious conflicts that have roiled our world really ever since there was any such thing as religion.
And the book is very careful in laying out the fact that you're not just talking about Islam, you're not just talking about Christianity, you're pretty much talking about every religious faith. And I want to go back to the connection you make to cave paintings. Now, cave paintings, we don't entirely know what they mean or what the artists were depicting. You feel as though some of these cave paintings, very, very old ones, were the first image of God. What led you to believe that?
Well, there's an enormous amount of archaeological and anthropological evidence to indicate that these magnificent cave paintings, which certainly dot the landscape of Europe and Asia, but exist, you know, as far afield as Australia and Indonesia. Some of them are actually here in North America, though they're much newer than the European and the Asian ones, that they are expressions of prehistoric spirituality, that they're not just, you know, caveman graffiti, if you will, but that they are representing a prehistoric sense of that which lies beyond the material realm. And, you know, a lot of this argument that I'm making actually has to do with the way that the very concept of God evolved in human spirituality. You're right. It's not just about Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. In fact, this conception, the humanization of the divine, goes back to before there was any such thing as religion. It's a function of our brains. And so in the book, I delve real deeply into the cognitive processes through which the very idea of God arose. And when you look at that evidence, that evolutionary evidence, what you find is essentially that we have no choice in the matter, that when we conceive of God, when we try to think of something that is, you know, by definition, so beyond human experience, there is no other way to make sense of that thing without making it human. And so I present the entire history of human spirituality going back some 500,000 years to today as one long, intimately linked, and remarkably cohesive attempt to make sense of the divine by progressively humanizing the divine until, of course, in the person of Jesus Christ, God literally becomes a human being.
And it's funny you mentioned evolution and cognitive science because you do a kind of a clever thing, and I think this is fairly early on, Adam and Eve, you see them as Homo sapiens. They're not the only people on the planet. You're sort of telling the story of human evolution and development, but adding these two biblical characters, Adam and Eve, in there. And you even sort of imagine them putting their handprints on one of the French cave paintings.
Right. Well, you know, what I'm trying to do is kind of flip the script a little bit and challenge some of the perceptions that we have. I mean, you know, many people accept the biblical notion that Adam and Eve were sort of the first of our species. And so what I say was, okay, let's assume that Adam and Eve were the first of our species. What would they have actually been like? How would they have dressed? What would they have eaten? How would they have thought of the divine? And so I make Adam and Eve our kind of prototypical Homo sapien ancestors. And I take them, I take the reader on a journey with Adam and Eve through their lives, through their spiritual lives. Yes, I follow them into one of these magnificently painted caves, these subterranean sanctuaries that were, in my reading certainly, and in many scholars' readings, an expression of prehistoric spirituality, the first religious expression, if you will. And I basically use them as a means of explaining to the reader what that kind of ancient spiritual life would have felt like, and how we have evolved since then. And then at the end of the book, I think I make what I think is a compelling argument for why we should maybe go back to
pantheism.
That prehistoric sense of spirituality, devoid of the kind of institutional religiosity that has in many ways captured our spiritual imaginations.
I'm speaking with religious scholar Reza Aslan. He's the author of Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth, but his latest book is called God, A Human History, and it comes out Wednesday. So then let's talk about what you just mentioned, which is this argument for pantheism. At what point did the major religions, at least, become monotheistic? At what point, I mean, because you address this in the book and it is a subject of debate. When did Judaism, for example, become monotheistic?
Well, you know, this is one of the most fascinating aspects of this history of God conversation. You know, there's a lot of debate about how far back religious expression can go. You know, I date it to at least 500,000 years, if not more. I mean, I actually think that it's just part of our evolution. It's embedded in our DNA. It's a mode of knowing. It's how our brains evolved. So I take it back even further than that. But if you're talking about material evidence, things that we can dig up that say, oh, this looks like it may have been for religious reasons, yeah, you can go back about 500,000 years. So in those 500,000 years, what we call monotheism, that is the belief in a sole singular God and no other gods, is 3,000 years old. And the question is why? Now, it's not that monotheism didn't arise in our spiritual history. It did. It's just that when it did arise, it was very quickly denied or rejected, sometimes violently so. It took a long time for monotheism to finally take root, and it took root in Judaism first and foremost. And it didn't take root in Judaism until during what is often referred to as the Babylonian exile, so about 586 BC. And part of the reason for that, the argument that I make in the book, is simply goes back to this humanization impulse. See, we're okay with implanting certain of our characteristics upon the gods. So we have one god that represents our emotional love. We have one god that represents our quest for violence and warfare. But the idea that all of our attributes, all of our human personalities, every aspect of who we are can reside in a single god was something that the ancient mind simply couldn't comprehend. Why would one god be responsible for both good and evil? Why would one god be responsible for the sun and the moon, for the sky and the earth? It just didn't compute in the ancient mind. And it took an existential crisis, which is what the Jews were facing when they were destroyed by the Babylonians and scattered into exile. It took an existential crisis to finally force the spiritual mind into this conception of a singular God. I tell that story in detail in the book, but in general, I think it's just an extraordinary thing to think about, that this notion of one God is such a new idea in the history of human spirituality.
And we only have a minute left, but I do want to ask you, why would pantheism then, separating that out again, removing the sort of human image of God, why would that make us kinder, gentler people?
Well, look, pantheism, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, is essentially the belief that God is all and all is God, that God is not the creator of the universe, God is the universe, that there can be no distinction between creator and creation. It's an idea that has been around since the beginning, and it exists almost in all religious traditions. But what it does is that it forces you to realize that you and the world around you is divine. It changes your relationship with other people, with people of other religions, people of other ethnicities. It changes your relationship to the world and how you think about it. If the entire universe is infused with the divine, then in a sense, if you're a worshipful person, you are worshiping the universe and all of creation. It leads to a much more pluralistic, much more peaceful, and in my view, much deeper and more meaningful spirituality.
That's Reza Aslan. His latest book is God, A Human History. He appears this Saturday in Atlanta, 8 p.m. in Zevin Park, as part of the Marcus Jewish Community Center's Book Festival. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's a show for today, but we would love to hear from you. When I say the word God, what image comes into your head? Describe what you mean by that three-letter word. You know how to reach us? Call us at 404-500-9457, or you can post on Facebook or Twitter. For today, that's on Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great day.